You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Well, hello! It's everyone's favorite musical theater thirst trap, Drew Gasparini, here with another episode of Now We're Talking, the podcast where I live out my dreams by chatting to showbiz friends of mine against their will. Today's guest is the utterly charming, stupidly talented, and beautifully unique Catherine Gallagher. She is a force to be reckoned with as an actor. She's done Broadway from the revival of Spring Awakening to her Tony-nominated work in Jagged Little Pill. You can see her in the Netflix series You, and above all else, it should be known that I have an unstoppable crush on her. Ladies and gentlemen, she's a favorite of yours and mine. Now we're talking with the lovable Catherine Gallagher.
You were saying last time you did a podcast, what?
My hair just kept hitting the mic, so now I need to remember to hold it.
You know what I never have a problem with ever?
Hair hitting a
my
mic?
My hair hitting anything, because yeah. I wake up to 1,000 little suicide notes on my pillow.
Oh,
and
no.
Yes, that's what happens when you go bald. It's like you wake up and you're like, there's half of my scalp
because
on
they're jumping ship.
They're jumping ship. Thank you. I like to look at myself as God's dandelion, and he's just making a wish on my head.
That's so nice.
We are here with Catherine Gallagher. Yay. And I got to say, I'm so happy you're here to talk to me for a little bit today, because I maybe secretly to you, but not so secretly in the world, I'm intimidated by you. And
what?
I am. I'm intimidated by you and your utter chillness and cool persona.
Oh my gosh, you're gonna realize that I'm not chill.
When we get to the fart contest at the end of this, the whole world will know. But you remind me, this is so strange because I'm about to give a shout out to someone I haven't talked to in like 20 years, but there was a girl in fourth grade and her name was Kelly Yearby. Shout out to Kelly Yearby. And I had the weirdest, like, I didn't, you know, when you're young and you don't know what a crush is and like you try to act a certain way around a human person.
I still do that.
Yeah, it's so, well, adulthood is no easier than childhood. That's what we're all really discovering here. But every time I'm around you, it reminds me of this time very specifically that I was in fourth grade and I
didn't. Are you saying you have a crush on me?
I have a bit of a crush on you, Catherine Gallagher. I have a bit of a crush on you.
I'm so flattered.
The way that I would handle having a crush was not with like any amount of smoothness or dependency on what I looked like or any of my athleticism or things that would make boys feel good about being boys. I thought humor was the thing. And a bunch of guys were like, you know, that girl Kelly, I think she thinks you're cute. You should make her laugh. So I went over to her and farted as loud as possible and nothing happened. She hated my guts forever. And then she got the nickname Smelly Kelly because I farted near her. Nothing makes sense. Anyway.
That's so awful.
So this is my public apology
being
to
a kid
Kelly.
Is so hard.
Being a kid is so hard. What was I thinking? And why did I think, oh, I know what makes everybody laugh? A fart. I'll go fart on
well,
this
fart
human
jokes
person.
Jokes make everyone laugh.
I mean, fart jokes are
They're
funny,
so
but like
funny. But the act of them on another person is where you went wrong.
That's where I made the wrong turn. That was my faux pas. That was definitely my faux pas. Catherine, I really am so excited that you're here today. I have a few random things to talk to you about, but this is just a chat. And that's what this is. Basically, the entire point of this podcast is I'm having people on that fascinate me.
Okay.
I'm having people on that inspire me.
Okay.
And I'm having people on that are in my friend circles, but I truly realize even my best friends, like Alex Briben, he was on the podcast a couple weeks ago, or we recorded his episode a couple weeks ago. I don't know shit about anybody I am close to or am
you
in the similar circles
at.
I need to get better at this. Mm-hmm. I think it's a byproduct of show business. You're going to teach me the ways on how to be a better human. So you are just too cool.
Yes,
you are.
Am not.
Here we go. Listen.
It's gassing me up in a good way, though. It's good.
Tony nominated. Let's start right there. Grammy nominated. Let's go there. Okay?
Yeah. I'm so red right now.
Am I embarrassing you?
I can't That's handle right. praise.
This is hard. I mean, I came right out of the gate saying, yes, I have a crush on you. And secondly, look at all the accolades you have. Can you even handle this?
See, I'm not chill because my face is bright red right now.
My question to you, leading into that, Tony nominee, Grammy nominee, Catherine, everybody wants to know, should I, Drew Gasparini, get an OnlyFans page? What do you think?
Yes.
Why do you think I should? That was so quick to say yes. I love the support, your optimism. You know what? You should, your next thing after you win the Tony and the Grammy, you should come out with a line of perfumes and it should be called Optimist. Optimist. Oh.
You're good with words. You should consider writing songs.
Oh, well, you
think you might be great at it.
Well, gee whiz. Look at all the kindness back and forth. Wow. I won't get embarrassed. I'll allow you to get embarrassed, but I'm so shameless.
You have a healthier relationship with yourself and praise than I do.
Boy, I don't know if I would call anything about me healthy. I've got this horrible.
This is just about to turn into therapy.
Let's go. It all started with my mother. It was 1991.
Oh, don't I get it?
Let's have the show. That's actually a realistic great place to start. There's things about you people know.
Yes.
There's things about you people don't know. Let's start with the things people don't necessarily know. A lot of people know who your father is.
Yes.
A lot of people know who your parents are. Let's talk about what your childhood was like. Let's get into it. What was being Catherine Gallagher as a child like? Siblings? What's the situation? Tell me everything.
Well, I grew up in New York City. I grew up on 71st and Broadway.
Oh my God. I had no idea.
I'm a New York City kid. I know. I moved to LA when I was 11. So people tend to just wipe the New York City out of my history, which is truly
bringing it back here.
Yeah. But you know, I was born in Manhattan and I have one brother. He is 3 years older than me. He's a filmmaker, a writer, and a director. He's brilliant. He's like,
oh my God, you artistic baboons.
I know.
It's crazy.
And it's crazy because he wasn't even, you know, he was always artistically inclined, but I'll say that he wasn't chasing it in the same way until he was like a senior in high school. And then he just like became like obsessed with cinema and started, you know, I mean, he's always read everything. He's so smart. And so we had a sneak attack on my parents. The first they were like, oh, we'll have one kid that maybe is going to end up being like a banker because he's really smart and good with numbers. And then they were like, and then Catherine, I mean, she's a lost cause, but at least her brother will support her. And now we just are both like, sorry about it. But they're obviously
you're
so supportive.
You're not all on the struggle bus when it comes to being an artist, though. So that's pretty cool.
We both work very hard.
Yes.
We have a good work ethic.
Is that brought to you by your lovely parents?
Yes.
It is.
Yes. My dad, I think that one of the really amazing side effects, and it doesn't always work out this way, but in my case at least, of having both parents in the entertainment industry. My mom used to produce music videos and commercials and she was a dancer and her mother was a dancer. And so like everyone's in the arts.
Catherine gets her moves from her mom. That's what we're learning.
My moves from my mom.
That's right.
But I really get them from my dad. He's going to kill me for telling this story, but I'm going to, because he tells a story about this one time he was auditioning for Fosse.
Yeah.
Like the person.
Yeah. The actual Bob Fosse.
Yeah, like Bob was in the room.
Robert Fosse.
Robert Fosse was in the room. And my dad had to dance. And my dad like worked so hard on this. He like danced his little face off. And he like left and he was like, well, that was like, you know, I did the best I could do. And he left the room. And he's going to listen to this and be like, that's not what happened, but it is what happened. Uh-huh. Or in my memory. But he could tell it a lot better, which is the truth. But so later in the afternoon, he's in another building in New York City and he's waiting in the elevator and the door opens and it's Bob Fosse.
Oh my gosh.
And my dad is like, oh no. And then it's really quiet for a second. And Fosse just looks at my dad and he goes, Gallagher, right? And my dad's like, oh yes, Mr. Fosse, yes. And he goes, interesting sense of rhythm you got there.
Wow.
I think I got my dad's moves. I don't think.
You're the guy with the eyebrows who was seizing on the floor. Is that that's who that was? Ah, yes, of course.
I think my dad can dance, but my mom was like a gorgeous professional.
She was a dancer.
She, yeah.
And a dancer, as we know. dances.
Yeah.
So
she danced. She danced. She dances. Her mom was in the ballet company at Radio City.
Oh, wow.
And danced at the Diamond Horseshoe. Like, yeah. So dance runs in my family, not necessarily in me, but
the lineage here of that was a very pretentious way to say lineage. Was lineage very soft G? The showbiz lineage goes back quite a ways. Is it like that on your dad's side as well?
No.
So your dad was the first one in his side to kind of step into show business.
Oh yeah, the first Broadway show my grandmother on my dad's side ever saw, he was in.
Wow.
So she was a bacteriologist. She was in the lab that discovered penicillin.
Oh, my
like one
God.
Of 10 people. She's genius. Yeah, really, really smart.
What? Like, I have nothing but cave people from my father backwards. And you have scientists and artists.
Yes. Yeah.
And my crush really on you cool. grew three sizes this day. My God.
Don't worry. By the end of this, I'll squash it.
You keep saying that. Yeah. We'll see. All right.
No, I have a tendency to do that. Don't worry. It's one of my special skills.
Oh, put that on the resume. Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Your grandmother on your dad's side was a fucking bacterial, what did you
bacteriologist?
This is a word I'm going to immediately forget. If it,
yeah,
it's
I know.
A term. It's a term that not enough people say on the norm for me to register.
I'm so nervous for my dad to hear this because he's going to be like, I know that I'm like probably, these are stories he's told a million times and I'm like, oh no, what am I getting these details wrong? But I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Well, we can have him on and we can set the story straight if it really comes down to
that. And he's such a good storyteller too that it's like worth hearing it.
Can he, what is it called? A spin a yarn? Is that what they call it? That's like the old timey way of saying, my relatives are all from the mountains and the hills. They spin a yarn.
They spin a yarn. I like that.
Keep going with your childhood. I get so fascinated. So you're a New York child. You probably saw your dad do the Broadway thing live a few times because Peter Gallagher was quite the song and dance man on the Broadway.
Yes.
It's an amazing thing. I really love seeing the two of you kind of in parallel of each other, just what his career was and what yours is. Yours just started and it's already like this fantastic trajectory of what's to come. TV, the Netflix show, I'm too scared to watch it. I'm too scared watch the whole thing.
It's so funny because my scenes in that show are not scary. I am not involved in the scary things.
But
I always forget that it's a scary show because my experience were like brunch scenes and dick jokes. And then everyone's like, you're on that scary show. And I'm like, am I?
I thought this whole show was just about dicks and brunch the whole time.
Literally every time we would show up to a table read, I would be like, well, every time I show up to a table read, I'd be like, damn, you guys, this is scary. And they're like, this is a thriller. Yeah. And I'm like, whoa.
Oh, my God. If only I knew.
Wild.
That's so crazy. Wow. Okay, wait. Yeah. So back to Young Cat. And I'm going to call you
Young Cat
because I'm getting so comfy with you. Young Cat.
I love it.
Young Cat in New York City. What was it? Yeah. Was show business always kind of normalized for you because of your father?
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very much, you know, we sort of like, I never understood that being an actor was any different than being a lawyer or being a cab driver or a chef. I was like, everyone goes to work.
Yeah.
And it didn't really hit me until really the OC happened that like, oh, this is a little, well, actually I remember the moment it kind of hit me because I was like saying hi to a friend who was waiting in line at school. And I like hugged her and the girl behind her goes, oh, you think you can cut in line just cause your dad's a movie star?
Oh.
And I was like, I don't think I can do anything.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that was like the first time where I was like, huh, this might like people look at this differently.
Yeah.
But it was really, I think, a real advantage to me because, you know, it never seemed out of reach.
Right.
I was like, oh, I'll just prepare to do this job in the same way someone else would prepare to do another job.
Did you look at it kind of as like a, this is what I do because this is what grown-ups do because this is what my parents do?
Yeah.
Or was it like, I really want to do this thing as well? Like, what was the fire under your ass to get you where you are?
I never considered anything else. Yeah. Like, I was pretty much performing for anyone and everyone from the moment I could walk until now.
Right.
Like,
you were an annoying child, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I literally think I've only gotten, like, less bold as time has gone on. Like, the more I've worked, the more I'm like, are you sure you want to see me do something at all? Like, I don't even have to be here. Yes. I'm so sorry for speaking. Yeah. So, when like as a kid, I was just like, everyone here obviously wants to hear me sing. I'm gonna start right now.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, you know, a shift in self-awareness.
See, that's that healthy ego that we're talking about. That is
yes,
that's
it's beautiful. Gone now.
I'm so sad to hear that because I love that fun, the little kid boldness of just like everyone. My sister was like this. I have a sister named Casey, and she's
I know Casey. We did Crazy Ones together.
Oh right, excellent. Yes, of course, of course, of course.
She's
with
so great.
With Mr.
Her.
Zachary
yes,
Zadek.
Zach.
God,
yes.
I love that boy.
I think it was Crazy Ones. Yeah, it was Crazy Ones we did.
And I love that show too. The music's so good. But Casey used to like she was such the middle child because Chloe was born and there's a 10-year gap between Chloe and I and Casey's like right between and I'm like tied as Irish twin oldest with my brother so Casey's
love
right
it.
Between all four of us and she would literally it'd be my birthday and the cake's brought out and they're singing happy birthday for me and then after everyone's done singing happy birthday she would like stop me from blowing out the candles and be like okay but before we get on with the celebration stands on the table and we'll just sing happy birthday as a solo all by herself a lovely rendition
that's
of
iconic
it's bold
that's truly iconic.
It's bold it's the childhood boldness
that's iconic
so okay so you were an annoying kid
yeah, I was an annoying
in
kid.
The sense
I was
that you were
very
always
loud.
Open to perform and always open to share your gifts with the planet.
Yeah, it didn't matter who was watching, if anyone, or whether or not they were willing.
And you moved to LA when you were 11. So did this, this start in LA or was it like young in New York?
No, it started at like 3 years old, yes, standing on the steps of my apartment building singing. I dressed up as Annie every single day in preschool and I would stand on the tables and sing Tomorrow. So it started young.
Yeah,
it started young. And then honestly, it was moving to LA, I think, that sort of really, that was the first time in my life that I became sort of like debilitatingly self-aware.
Yeah.
The
LA, LA has a, it does that to you.
Yeah, LA is, it's a tough crowd. It's a tough crowd. I was like in New York City, like I had so many good friends, like best friends since I was a kid. It was the dream. And then my folks were like, we're moving to LA. And not only that, your dad's on the biggest TV show in the world.
Right.
And everyone wanted to be my friend for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Which wasn't clear in sixth grade, but it was very clear in seventh grade when no one wanted to talk to me all of a sudden.
Wait, let's really dive into this. Seriously, I am so interested in this. When you have famous parents, no one looks at you and has any sort of empathy for you. They feel like your life is peachy perfect. And I'm sure it came with amazing perks because of your father's occupation and being
I
on the
I did get a free Juicy Couture dress.
Okay. Well,
from
I mean,
the costume department.
Then fuck
so,
all your friends. That way.
Yeah.
You win. That's it.
Yeah, I know.
But
I know.
What was it like to feel like people were basically using you for friendship? I mean, like it feels a little, I don't know because I didn't have this problem, but I cave people, nothing but cave
yes,
people.
Okay, so. I doubt that. But they've created those cave people have created very impressive children. So I'd be surprised if they're
Kelly
as
and George
cave
know
people-y.
That you said that.
Yes, Kelly and George, I think are probably very brilliant themselves.
That's very kind of you to say, and I'll let them know that you think that. I certainly can't let them know I think that.
Yeah, don't.
I keep them under my thumb somehow. So tell me more about like what this was. It they're like bullying. Did you feel like people were talking behind
your
back? Oh my god! Oh my god!
Oh my god! Yeah, I ended up having to switch schools because people weren't nice to me. So basically, what happened?
Yeah. Oh my god!
I moved to LA and I was immediately very popular. I was like friends with the cool kids. Like it was all things were going well for Catherine. And then what happened was I don't know honestly what happened. This guy who was the grade above me, who was like the most popular guy in all of Los Angeles, like,
yeah,
he was very cool and had very like
jacket, smoking cigarettes,
Yeah, like that was the vibe.
Yeah, cool dude.
Everybody knew his name, and he messaged
me. Like Skyler or Racer or Striker.
I mean, I can't say. It was far more, it was a more normal name.
It was
that.
Bob Fosse.
It was Bob Fosse. So when Bob Fosse called, he messaged me on MySpace one day, and it was about my dad too. It was like, your dad's the coolest or something.
Yeah.
And we had met that day, and I got home and I had a message from him. And so he started messaging me all these things, which I was like, oh, this like really cool, cute boy is talking to me. He must like me. And I think I was still too naive or maybe optimistic, rose-colored glasses.
Yeah.
Those have all been things I've been accused of in my earlier years, maybe not so much anymore. to understand that he just wanted to be close to a shiny new toy and, you know, of fame and whatnot.
Right.
And so I got really excited, and I, you know, got a crush on him, and he would talk to me all the time. And eventually it became clear that I was the joke. And so when I became the joke, yeah, it was like prank phone calls every night, asking me out on a date. And then I said yes. And then they said, ha ha, psych, you're fat. And I was like, oh.
Oh my God. Somebody said, Bob Fosse said psych.
Bob Fosse. Yeah. And like they would create fake YouTube accounts and comment mean things about my body and my voice.
Oh my God.
On songs I had written. Yeah. It was like really painful.
They were making fun of your art. Like this is
and like would point and laugh at me in the hall when I walked by.
Like it was, they would just like, ha ha.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally. I was with my whole class. I will never forget this day as long as I live. I was with my whole class and we were going like from one building to another, and him and all his little friends, he had this one friend that was like really at a target on my back, and they were sitting at a table like waiting for my class to walk by. And when we did, they all pointed and they're like, ha 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 ha. And I was
that
like, and like,
mess
my
me
name.
Up for the rest of my life.
Yeah. It kind of did.
Oh my like, God.
Won't lie. And so then once that happened, all my friends were like, well, she's obviously a loser. So then I stopped getting invitations to like hang out with my friends after school and go to birthday parties. And so,
you know,
yeah,
I hope you win this fucking Tony so you can get on that stage and say, just read them and weep, baby. I can't believe that. I really cannot believe that, because in my head, and I listen, we all go through our phases when we're younger, but there's no question in my brain that you were just as charming and approachable and kind for no other reason than to just be kind than you are right now. I do not understand this.
You know, I'm really grateful that all of that did happen. I was just about to say it gave me a thick skin, but I honestly don't think it did. I think I still have a very thin skin. And I think that that's really important to be an artist. My acting coach brings this up a lot.
It's why
having
you write such amazing sad boy songs.
Thank you.
You do.
I do feel things quite intensely.
We wear our organs on the outside. I say that all the time. I think artists just like when the wind blows, it stings us a little more than anybody else, you know?
I think you have to be, I think everyone has that capability. I just think it's whether or not you allow yourself to feel it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's always the same temperature outside for everybody, but everyone has a different awareness of it,
yeah.
You know, and everyone's wearing different, you know, layers of coats.
I wear a hazmat suit these days, but yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, and I do think that, you know, if I hadn't experienced all of that, I'm trying to remember exactly what my acting coach is. She says you have a thin skin, but a strong spine.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really something that I, would not have had I not sort of been so it's what helped me really, really buckle down and start working hard.
Yeah.
Because that was when I started really, really writing songs and really, because I was just so determined to not have to go to school anymore.
Yeah.
That I was like, if I work hard enough, I can just be a musician and I won't have to
precisely
be like,
how I felt.
When
I started writing songs, I never got made fun of for it. But when you start doing it, I don't feel like people in their teens have a grasp of what to do with you when you start going, hey, we want to hear this new song I wrote. because music is this thing that you flock to elsewhere. It's not right here in your immediate, you know, grasp. And then when they see a friend of theirs do it, they look at you a little differently and they kind of go, oh, I didn't realize you were kind of one of those. And it made me go, you know what? It wasn't that I had a chip on my shoulder, and it doesn't sound like you had a chip on your shoulder.
No.
But there is, of course, there's always something to prove, but it's more to prove it to yourself and defy what you're hearing from everybody else or feeling from everybody else. I mean, if you were getting that kind of ridicule just for being yourself, I love the idea that what you chose to do was lean into yourself even harder and become this version of you that like rose out of the ashes like a phoenix, Catherine!
Well, I will say one of the things that was that was really...
It was actually 20 years of deep depression and fast food every night.
I did go into therapy. No, I mean, I did, 100%.
Good for you.
No shame there. I love therapy.
Absolutely.
But one of the things that was really revolutionary for me was I was doing musical theater on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And there I met this group of people that is still my group of best friends 100%. Today. And then a lot of them ended up going to the high school that I switched to. So that gave me this outlet. That gave me proof that who I was okay.
Yeah.
Even if when I was in school, I was like, okay, you have to hide this today. You have to be a little bit quieter. You have to like not give a fuck. And if you're going to cry, go to the bathroom. And like, you know, and so I think that I'm so grateful that while there were people who were very determined to, you know, make me feel othered, there was this group of people that already felt othered by the world. And we all got together and really, you know, I think embraced each other's weirdness. Actually, I'm going to fuck it up. Ben said it in his Tony acceptance speech. He said,
Ben Platt,
the
for those who are
you...
listening and have no idea who she's talking about.
He said, the things that make you different or what make you powerful are the things, hold on, we have to get this quote.
All right, we're going to pull it up.
Tony speech. Because, you know, well, for those of you who don't know, he is one of the, hold on, here it is. Okay. The things that make you, the things that make you strange are the things that make you powerful.
Yes.
And Ben was one of my best friends that I met, my thing is
Catherine just violently in a fit of rage
violently
threw the computer across the room.
And Ben was one of the people that I met doing after school theater.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we really, you know, all learn from each other is like the things that do make you strange are the things that eventually will help you become the person that you are.
I always refer to, and that is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I remember Ben's speech and I thought it was gorgeous.
So beautiful.
And I can't wait to hear your speech. I'm so determined that you're going to.
Maybe one day.
But I have this, I've said it 1,000 times, even on this podcast with a few other people, that it reminds me of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the animated movie that comes
on
Christmas time. Musical theater, for me and for many, you, everybody, it is the island of misfit toys. It's just where you don't know where your place is in the world, but something really pulls you into this world where you feel completely safe. And it's the weirdest bunch of individuals, literally, in any medium in show business.
100%.
I've been in the music business for longer than I've been in musical theater. And the weirdest people are in musical theater. And I love that about this industry. And it's what makes me feel safe and makes me feel like myself.
I think that that's really a powerful point is that like, you know, and my parents have always said it, like, it's a bunch of people with something to say, I think.
Yeah.
And there's community in it.
Yeah.
You know, you never do a musical alone.
No.
You never do, you know, even being on, you know, being on a, when you're at home watching TV and you see a program, it's easy to forget that there are, you know, lighting designers and grips and like a costume and hair and makeup and all of these different people, because when you do it well, you don't think about those things. You don't notice those things.
Right.
And I think when you're doing a musical, when you're seeing a musical, when you're, you know, watching a Broadway show, you see the guy operating the spot.
Yeah.
You know, if you're sitting close enough, you see, you know, a dresser handing something off in the wings. And and you really understand that it is so communal and that without one single person, the entire operation will fall apart.
100%.
And that's a valuable lesson, I think.
I hope people are listening to this shit. It's amazing what she is saying right here.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
With your dad being who he was, yeah, and you underwent.
Well, he's still alive.
That, you know, he's really sorry.
I hope. I mean, I might want to check in on him.
We're going to have someone call Peter after this, yeah, and just make sure. But back then, when this was like a big hype,
yes,
for,
yeah,
him,
yeah,
with the OC and everything like that, because he doesn't come off this way. So I'm going to preface it with that. Yeah. Does your dad act like a famous person?
I don't think he thinks he's famous.
That's insane.
My dad is such a dork. Like, I can't even. He wears the goofiest hats.
I'm already in love with him.
He's really like, honestly, my dad and I are very, very, very similar. Like, anytime anybody meets my dad after getting to know me, they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. It's just like, yeah, whatever you are. He's really endlessly goofy. He wears very ugly hats and very ugly shoes, just like I do.
Okay, so
everything's about comfort for me.
Yeah.
You know,
I like that.
Beauty is pain, like, is that not something. Well, I think it helps because I think growing up, I was told I was ugly so many times, ugly and fat so many times, that I just,
it's wrong.
That I just,
with
like,
everybody.
It's not important to me anymore. I'm like, yeah, this is my face. These are my Crocs. What's up? I like to write songs.
I don't understand it. By the way, no one can see you. Only I can see you because
that's
the nature of a podcast. No one can see you. That's how this works. But you are in lighting that looks like you are a kidnap victim, and you're giving some sort of mom and dad, please rescue me with the money they need kind of videotape. And you're wearing a hoodie. There's nothing
to it.
What's going on? And you're stunning.
I'm buzzing again. You have
I
to
don't
stop
understand
it.
These people.
You have to stop.
I won't stop. Can't stop. Won't stop.
Hi there. Sorry to interrupt all the fun we're having with Catherine Gallagher, but I'm here strictly to promote more Catherine Gallagher. Guys, if you like the guests and you're falling in love with the guests on this podcast, do your best to support them. Follow them and see what they're up to on their Twitter accounts. You can follow Catherine Gallagher at Catherine G, and on Instagram, you can follow her at Catherine Gallagher. So go check out her shit. She's rad, yo.
This is, I really just, the thing about me is I consistently feel like this perpetual man-child. In the sense that I'm so fascinated by nostalgia and my childhood and everybody's childhood, because it's like the algorithm coming together of how you become the adult version. And then when you're an adult, it never fucking stops. I mean, like, you're like, oh God, knuckle hair all of a sudden. And oh God, I pulled an 8-inch nose hair out of my face this morning. Puberty never,
congratulations,
ever stops. And this is not, thank you very much.
You're,
I put,
welcome,
it in a Ziploc bag. I'm going to send it to the people in the Guinness Book of
As
World
you
Records.
Should.
But I want to know, mm-hmm, not puberty necessarily. Mm-hmm. We don't have to get weird.
Okay, great,
we could,
great.
But what was your least favorite part about growing up? And what is your favorite part about being a grown up?
Wow, good question. For me, I look back on how when I was really, really struggling, like when, mm-hmm, kids were really, really mean to me in school, and I was having a lot of issues with body image, and I was just like, oh, I hated myself. I was really mean to my parents. And there was like this span in seventh grade where nobody would talk to me at school. And I just took it out on my parents. And I have this like reel that goes on in my head, yelling at my mom that I hated her because she took my phone away. Because I was getting bullied on it and she didn't, she was like, stop looking at this.
She was protecting
your little heart. She was protecting me. And I was like, and I just looked at her and I was like, I hate you. And I think, look back on that and how now I see that, like, now I really see how like worried my parents were. And I think when I look back on my entire life, the moments where I was like angriest at my parents is always when they were right. And yeah, I think a part of me knew that.
Still today, that's why I get
it happened embraced. Like a year ago, too, where I was like, my parents are terrible, awful people. And then a few months ago, I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, whoops, they saved my life. Yeah, whoops.
Oops, sorry, guys. But it's true, like, and now when I sort of gotten to know my parents so much more as people, and I see, like, just how much they have given to me and how much they've cared and loved me, like, I look back on those moments of being so angry at them and just saying awful things where I'm like, imagine like creating this person who you've literally changed your entire life to like make happy and build a home for. And she just looks at you and like gives you the finger and screams that she hates you. Like that's so crushing. I feel bad about that like all the time. So that anger that I had, putting that in my parents' direction is what I really look back on. And I'm like, girl, why did you do that?
Right. Well, you know, I think we all kind of have those moments and I've just recently had these moments myself of reflecting on that and just being like, what was I so angry about? They gave me an amazing life.
It wasn't their fault.
Yeah, exactly. The ridicule at school had nothing to do with them.
They were mean to me. They were so nice. And I just was so mean. So yeah.
What do you like about being, you know, an independent and successful grown up? You have a lot to pat yourself on the back for, but like, what are some things about being a grown up that you really like?
I really like the people I've chosen to have in my life.
Beautiful.
That's what I really like. I really, you know, I always think that my dad always says this, his mom said it, show me your friends and I'll show you who you are. Yeah. And there was definitely a lot of trial and error in my life about, you know, the types of people that I gave energy to. And I can safely say now, looking around at my friends, that I just, I have the
greatest. You do have good people surrounding you.
I'm so sorry.
I only see it peripherally. Really peripherally?
That's good.
Insert word here. I only see it like on Twitter and things like that. But seriously, the way that you keep your circle, the people you keep in your circle is just so good. The support is so loud and there's so much love going back and forth between you guys. And I think it sets a really great example. You know, I have two younger sisters and like I might get slapped on the wrist for saying something like this, but I believe just in watching them and hearing stories from people we've had on this podcast and your stories here, I think girls have it a lot harder in high school and middle school and that part of their lives. And it does matter who you surround yourself with to kind of feel like you have somewhere safe to go. I love seeing the example you set on social media by putting your art out there. You are encouraging so many other young people and young women to come out and just be like, yeah, fuck the haters. And like, I like these people and they like me. And that's all that matters. It doesn't necessarily, you know what I mean? It's a really healthy.
That means so much to me.
It's a beautiful thing that you do. And I don't think the world can get enough of it. And it's like, it goes in a lot of different directions. I see it with mostly younger people than me. I'm 78 years old, as you know. But I watch Renee Rapp interact with people online. Mm-hmm. And it's like, she doesn't have to, A. And like, you see like the good she's putting out. I think it's a younger mind. Because people at my age.
Thank you for thinking I'm as young as Renee Rapp.
I think I put you all in the same bucket. Anybody younger than me is like 18 in my head. That's just how it works.
It's always sort of everybody, you know, one-ups a generation before them.
Yeah, you guys are one-upping us.
If we're doing it right. And I just am so inspired by, you know, the acceptance that it seems like teens and you know, young adults have today of each other. And how little of sort of, you know, people's differences are questioned.
Yeah. They're embraced really rather than questioned. And I think that is a beautiful thing. And I'm seeing people my age, again, 78.
Yeah, following suit.
100%. And they're going, God, what were we doing this whole time? You know, why were we wasting our energy judging someone else or trying to be different to fit in somewhere? And it's like, God, just fall into the pocket of me. Fall into the pocket of Drew, of whoever, of Cat.
I love it. That's what my best friend calls me.
Oh, great. Well, now I'm your best friend too. So there you go.
You're my best friend.
you were lived in LA. You lived in New York. Do you call yourself a New Yorker?
New Yorker, 100%.
Do you vibe with the New York pace of things more than Los Angeles?
Yeah, 100%. And I've now lived more years in New York. For a while, it was exactly 2020. Oh my God.
50-50.
She's 4 years old. It was, wow. When I was 22, I had spent exactly.
So math was never your strong suit.
No. Not at all. I didn't move to New York like as an adult until I was 22. I was living in LA for a while on my own before that. And so I had done 11 years.
Was that for Spring Awakening?
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah,
very
special show.
That's a very special
and
show.
And so, yeah, I lived 11 years in New York and 11 years in LA. So I was like pretty much split. And then I did a lot of living in both cities sort of in the last few years. But the past year and a half, I've been exclusively in New York. And so now I've officially tipped the scales. I've spent most of my life in New York. And this pandemic, it's just solidified it.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to be here in New York right now. Like, you know, even though I don't leave my apartment except for to walk my dog.
I mean, that's how I felt too. Like my little love affair with Cuomo or whatever that was going on. Just there was safety in his voice during the height of the scariness.
Yeah.
And I imagine a lot like something like 9/11 when New York, we were going through it so hard at the height of this COVID thing. And when you go through it together, you know, we were all just trying to get the curve to come back down. Mm-hmm. The minute it started coming back down, I was like, we did it, guys. We are New Yorkers. Yeah. And it was like this pride I've never had for anywhere else I've lived in my whole life. I've lived in San Francisco and LA and New York. And I qualify myself as a New Yorker through and through now, particularly because 100%. Of that situation.
It's the greatest city in the world. Like, and I know that, you know, there's all these jokes. There's that joke about the bodega tweet.
What was the bodega tweet?
So basically someone tweeted about like, you know, it was like, where else can you get like, you know, two Diet Cokes and like a roll of paper towels and, you know, it was like some joke about a bodega. She didn't even mention Bodega Cat. So she really missed the joke, but it's fine. Uh-huh. But then a bunch of people were like, have you never heard of a Walgreens? Like, I can get that at Walgreens. And like, so there's been a lot of New York hate on Twitter, just calling New Yorkers arrogant and stuff. And so I acknowledge that like by me saying New York City is the greatest city in the world, there's a ton of amazing cities. There's a ton of amazing places. But I do think that once you've lived in New York, it does become such a part of your identity, because I think if you are a New Yorker, you are a New Yorker. And if you were going to live anywhere else after a year in New York, you already would have. Like,
I agree with that. 1,000%. 1,000%. Yeah. What makes you cooler than most New Yorkers, because New Yorkers call themselves New Yorkers just for having been like, oh, it's 5-year mark. I'm a New Yorker now. You were born there. You were born and raised there to a point and then came back. You are such a fucking New Yorker. Not to mention you have Broadway shows, plural, under your belt. It's like, well, how much more of a staple can you become?
I am a bit of a New Yorker.
You're basically Simon at this point.
I do definitely, you know, I am through and through.
Let's talk a little bit about the things that you do as an artist. And then I'm not going to take too much of your time. We can wrap this up soon.
I'm in no rush.
Well, you might not be, but I have a dog to walk and take for a piss. He pees every half hour. It's like a trick he does. And it's not fun. And I don't know how to get him to stop. He's 11 weeks and I love him.
That's such a tough age. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, because I'll take him out for like a long time and I'll say the word potty 1,000 times. And he won't do it, but he'll walk right back inside. Just almost immediately. He'll come inside and be like, nope, this is where it is. This is how I pee now.
I mean, my dog's like 4 now and he's great and I love him. But at that age, it was just a lost cause. I mean, I don't think.
I love when he sleeps.
But it's going to get worse. I just warn you. Like, like now it's a cute age where they just like pee everywhere and like that's annoying, but like the rest of it, they're manageable.
Yeah.
3 to 9 months, they're demons. They're evil.
Well, he's doing this thing. He's really becoming rebellious. I'll wake up with the word bitch written on my forehead in Sharpie, and I know it was
him.
I know it was him, Gordon. So let me just ask a couple just things, and maybe they're not questions. Maybe this is just more of a loose little talky talk. But, like, let's talk about the transition from what it felt like to be accepted into the Broadway community. You know what I mean? Because and looked at as a separate entity from your dad.
Yeah.
You're there based on your talent. You're there based on your special quality. And I say this about you all the time. And I had you sing at one of my concerts a couple years ago. And the reason I love your performance and any performance you have is you sing not like anybody I know. You sing.
Not everyone likes that about me.
You sing with your whole body. It is insane. Like, I feel like you have muscles in your kneecaps that other people don't have that are in full flex because you're getting such a guttural, like, visceral sound out of you. It is just, oh my God, it makes you tune in right away. So all of your accolades are built upon your specialness and your talent and your uniqueness, which I just think is so alluring about you. What did it feel like when you were just like finally a part of this? We talked about it earlier, this community of Broadway, because it is a community. Once you're in, you feel so in, and it's a great feeling. So
I got really lucky with Spring Awakening because that cast was the best cast. I have ever been in.
Amazing
I will ever be
in.
That they're still my best friends. I was so blessed to have just the greatest group of people to be in a show with. That even like getting to Broadway, we were like, are we sure they wanted us? Like, we felt like we really snuck in the back door. They were basically, there was a couple months open at the Brooks Atkinson, and we were like, we'll take it. Like, it was really, we snuck out. No one, you know, and people really loved the show. We had a really cool, amazing, dedicated fan base. Like, you know, and the show for me personally wasn't that difficult. Like, or I shouldn't say not that difficult. It was very difficult learning how to do, but it wasn't that vocally taxing. It wasn't that physically taxing for me. And so I could like go out to Glass House every night, which was, you know, next to our show. And so I really got immersed in the community with my first Broadway show, which I just think was so lucky. And we sort of opened with Hamilton.
Yeah.
And so, you know, our cast sort of all became friends. And I just felt very, I did feel sort of immediately accepted. And I, you know, I was very careful when I was starting out to, I had a rule sort of within myself. Not like I told anyone this, but I sort of wouldn't answer questions about my dad early on. And I wouldn't, like, in my first few jobs. Now I'm obsessed with talking about it because I think it's so cool. And it's like, he's made me so much of who I am. And I think it's such an interesting perspective. But when I was younger, I was like, I want people to know I can get a job before they think it's because of him.
I'm sure it's similar to like Ben Platt's situation.
Yeah.
You know, just because his dad was also an established human being. And, you know, to all those people who gave you hell in high school or middle school, or whatever that was, I would like to say here on record that I was a fan of yours before I even knew that your dad was who your dad was.
Well, thank you.
I was just like drawn into this thing that you do. You're visceral, you're guttural, all those things. It's just like this aggressiveness behind your performance and your writing, and we're going to talk about that in a second as well. Anyway, so back to this experience.
So I mean, I just felt sort of immediately, you know, immersed into this community, which I just became obsessed with. I even went back to LA because I was living in LA. Or I thought I was living in LA. I went back to LA for 2 months, and then I moved permanently to New York. I was like, I'm going to go back to my house in LA. Then I did, and I was like, no, thank you. I was like, this isn't it.
No, this doesn't
And so I moved officially back to New York.
Wow.
And,
I loved, you don't know this about me, or maybe you do. I don't know what gets spread around the rumor mill these parts.
Things.
But, okay.
Research.
Back in the day when Spring Awakening had just opened, and it was like the biggest shit, the original cast.
Yes.
My whole plot in my 20s when I first moved to New York was basically try to date all those girls. And I succeeded about halfway. dating many of them.
That was my plot too, except for I was 12.
Yeah, see, that's that. I was in the age group. It worked out for me.
So it was different. Yeah.
But when you guys came in with the revival, and I'm still close with all the original cast of Spring Awakening, they were like, "Are we old? Like, what the fuck? They're reviving a show that was just here."
I know.
But that's amazing because you gave it a whole new life and a whole new way to look at it. Thank you, Michael Arden.
Michael Arden, just one of the greatest brains to, and Andy Mendes. The whole thing was Andy's idea, I believe. He was like, "What is Spring Awakenings with Death Last?"
I tell this to everybody, and it's not true, but I still tell it to people that Andy Mendes owes his entire career to me.
Good.
Because he won a Nymph Award for Best Actor in a musical I wrote called Crazy Just Like Me. It was him and Andrew Kober.
Good cast.
It was a great cast. Yeah, it was a good time. Cast. It was supposed to be Alex Brightman and Andrew Kober. And then we had auditions instead of casting Alex, and Andy came in and we were like, "Oh my God, Andy's amazing." And he won the award. And then right after that, he got Smash and everything else. So I'd like to go ahead and just take all the credit.
You started his career. Yeah,
no, that's all.
Sure.
That's all we're
for
saying. Sure. You heard it here first, folks. Amazing. So once you left Spring Awakening, what was the in-between period between that and Jagged?
I did not work, get a single callback, or have anything success adjacent for a year and a half.
I hope everybody is hearing this. Yeah. Because I guarantee people are like, "She just books and books and books."
No, she doesn't. Let me tell you. What happened was I was in the studio a lot, and I was still sort of back and forth between LA and New York, and I was writing a lot, nothing I'm particularly proud of. I definitely had sort of an identity crisis. There was a hot pink hair moment. There was, it was just, 2016 was not my year. not great, not great. And it was a tough year for me. And so sort of all the way, honestly, up until oh my God, it was like a year, it was like 2017. Wasn't great either. What basically happened was, like, 2017 started and I started buckling down more on music, and I was like, I guess I should move back to LA, and you know, I'm not really working. And I met these incredible producers in LA, and they were like, "Come to LA for 3 months. Let's do it. We're going to make your artist project. We're going to make it happen." And I was like, okay, awesome.
Amazing.
And then I had this like one audition before I left town, and I was like, whatever, it's not like I'm going to get it. Like, this is so stupid. But my manager was like, "It's actually a really good script." And I was like, "It's on Lifetime. Like, you've never sent," I was like, "That's not usually the type of thing I go for. Like, Lifetime's usually these original movies and not usually roles, you know, that I fit into the the archetype of."
Right.
And so I was really surprised, and they were like, "No, just read the script. It's really different." And I was like, "Okay, sure." And I don't, because I'm so angry at the world. And I was just like, whatever. I have this audition on Thursday. And I was really at an angry at the world place in my life. And I went on this, what I thought was a date, which then wasn't a date. And so I was just pissed by the end of it, because it was like a really confusing situation.
Yeah, that's my entire love life. Yes,
it was just this thing where I was like, "You broke up with your girlfriend for me and it's not a date." I was like so confused and angry that my time was wasted. And I was like, fuck all this shit. And I was like, and I have this fucking audition in the morning, whatever. And I wake up and I was like, fuck, I think I should cancel this audition. I don't want to do it. This is, everything sucks. But I should at least read the script.
Yeah.
I read the script. And the problem was, it was very good.
That is a problem.
The problem was, I felt this immediate pang of regret, because I was like, oh, I should have done this sooner.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And then I just drilled it for the next 3 hours. I learned my lines. I focused harder than I've ever focused. I went in. I thought I crushed it. And about 3 weeks later, I landed in Los Angeles. I turned my phone on and I had about 37 missed calls. And it was my rep saying, "Hey, you have to turn around. You just booked Annika on the show You."
Yes.
And then a week later, they were like, hey, there's an open call for Jagged Little Pill. We know you love Alanis. We know you wanted to do the workshop before. There wasn't a role. Now there's an open ensemble call. You're welcome to go in for it. There's no role for you, but, you know, we know you love her. And I was like, yeah, okay, sure, why not? And I go in for it. And then I get a call back for this, like, tiny, tiny role in the ensemble that sort of pops out for this scene in this little moment, for the role of Bella, which is who I played. And who was a tiny featured ensemble role and then grew into a principal role throughout the, you know, 3 years of the show.
Oh my God.
That was how that happened.
Based on you getting that part, they kept enhancing the role around you, basically.
I don't know if it was like,
Go ahead and say that. We'll just go ahead and say that.
I would say that
people are hating you for the right reasons.
I would say that they, you know, as we began to see what the show was, it, you know, there, especially the audience in Cambridge especially showed us, you know, what areas of the story people wanted more, you know, more in-depth storytelling with.
That's amazing that you guys treat it like a focus group and you guys kind of like let the audience's response and interaction with you guys help the development of the piece itself. I wish more producers had their eye on that because it is so important.
It's
we are not doing this for
Paulus.
Us. We're doing it for you, you know?
It's one thing Diane Paulus is particularly brilliant at. She is unafraid to try anything. She will try everything on. She never lets you rest on your laurels. She's constantly challenging you, constantly, you know, asking what if, which I think is the most powerful question you can ask in the theater and any
absolutely
art. And so, yeah, so we were really, really lucky. So that's how that happened.
That is so amazing. And the show, like the generation who loved the show, fucking love this show. I do private vocal coachings and there's every week is someone is bringing in something from Jagged and I always want to say, you know, this is from the album that came out in 1995, right?
And they're like, what do you think sings this song?
They think this is a musical that exists all on its own without Alanis's album.
That's such a compliment.
It's a huge compliment. You guys,
but
have
they
put
should
a stamp
listen to Alanis's
something.
Record.
Yes, they should. It is that obviously changed my life as a songwriter. But the show is beautiful. Speaking of songwriter, let's end with a little bit about you and your songwriting. Can I just ask you, because you write, and I don't want to qualify it this way, but I actually think it's a good way to qualify some of the songs of yours that I've heard. You write such amazing sad boy music. What is your favorite sad boy song outside of your own catalog?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I love sad songs. Okay. Well, Rabel's one of my favorite songwriters and a friend of mine. And
amazing.
And he writes such good sad boy songs. Hurts Like Hell is like one of my favorite songs of all time.
Yes.
I mean, listen, I'm a Taylor Swift fanatic. Everybody knows it. I'm a Swiftie since I was 12. Like,
she's a Swiftie since she's 12, people.
Swiftie since I was 12. So I got to say, like, I have a playlist. I have a Taylor Swift playlist for every mood, I would say, of her sad songs. Obviously, All Too Well, Reign Supreme.
How can we get Taylor Swift to hear this and then invite you on tour with her? I want to just say this as a songwriter to another songwriter. Yeah. You pour yourself into it, babe. You really do. You pour yourself into your words. It doesn't even matter what your melodies are, because when you sing them, they sound like Catherine Gallagher. You have a cemented stamp of uniqueness in how you present music and songs. And when it's your own songs and your own words, it's 10,000 times more powerful. I am such a fan of everything that you do.
Thank you so much. I'm a fan of yours.
Well, check it out. I'll say this: the Grammy goes to you, the Tonys are all gonna go to you. You're gonna get more than we all think exists because you deserve that and then more. Go check out Catherine's music anywhere you find music and follow her on all the things. If you don't already do that, if you're following her already, stop and follow me. I would like more attention. I can't thank you enough for just taking an hour of your time and chatting with me, because
thanks for taking your time to chat with me.
You thought my crush would be diminished at this point, but it has only grown and grown grown into something.
I've done it all wrong.
Nah, I don't know what you did, but you did it right in my book. Anyway, thank you so much, Catherine. That's going to be the end of this episode.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Now We're Talking with me, Drew Gasparini. Now We're Talking is a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network, and you can find out more about me and this podcast at bpn.fm/Now We're Talking or on Instagram at Drew Gasparini. Hey, special thanks to our guest Catherine Gallagher for being lovely and to all of you listeners for being lovely and listening. Make sure to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcasts and keep tuning in for more amazing guests. And guys, also, don't forget, save the whales! Save the fucking whales.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.